song title again?
Anda de lo lebi ele du mare.
Is it rolling, Bob?
Take four. Take five, I should say, really, for Dave Brubeck. Sad is his passing, but I'm very, very glad to say that the high school friend who I meet in Montreal each summer when I go back after the girls go back to Japan, I stay a night in Montreal. I always meet Mike. We have a smoked meat together, and I recall Mike from becoming friends with him in grade 9 and going into his basement where he had cool speakers in the walls, high up on the walls. A little closet turned into a little cabinet. He was a geek, I guess, in those days. He was the other Leica friend I had. Leica fanatic, you know, him and his M3 and his light, you know, the lights. A Valoi. It was a Valoi 2. Was at the state of the art then. The enlarger and two good friends, both Leica fanatics from high school, introduced me to photography in 1967. Still have the camera, the Leica 3B. Yeah, these days it just takes snapshots, but they're fun. But I still love the art, and it's great to see people like Gary, formerly of Chubb Creek, with his unbelievable array of photos. And then John Meadows and his other experimentation on the trains and with the models and with things. Now, what were you talking about? Just back from the Leonard Cohen concert and a little incoherent, as I often am when I arrive at the Eglinton Gull Station. Whew. Yeah, great concert. Just so wonderful to see him. And at the end, the evening was full of good moments, but at the end, there's a woman sat beside me. It's such a long story. I don't want to bore you with it now, but it's a good one. Both Brian and I ended up in row one in different sections, and we could see each other because there was nobody in between us, you know. But we were about 16 seats apart. The lighting was fantastic for the concert, and I didn't realize that till the second night when I was just staring at those big curtains hanging down, and you know, the lights projected, the colors, the even one part sort of psychedelic, and well, maybe not psychedelic, but you know, flashy. It was flashy. It was great. And so right at the end, there's a lady sitting beside me. It wasn't really her seat, but she just said, "Anybody sitting here?" And I said, "No, not now." Or doesn't look like it, or something like that. And she sat down. Yeah, good for her. She's got a better seat. And then at the end, she just got up for the very last encore and walked towards the front. And I thought, again, good for her. And then Brian saw that, and Brian said, "I'm going closer to get some pictures." And so, of course, I didn't waste any time. And it was that fun. Well, some people had already left, you know, shortly into the encore. The passageways are wide open, so you just walked right down really close, and it was beautiful. I'm so glad I did, to look up into his face, not on the screen, the real face you could see clearly with this giant smile, like he really enjoyed what he was doing. That was nice. That was nice. He is one of my gods. He is one of my gods. One of, should be one of your gods. I'm thinking a lot about, you know, I think maybe sometimes Leonard Cohen does put you into some darker places. And I there was a lot of beauty. The, I was going to say the Weed Sisters, the Tweed Sisters, the Sisters from Kent. Boy, are they ever good. Heavenly, sent from heaven, angels. And Sharon Robinson, who co-wrote the stuff and sang. Alexandra. It was just a stunning high moment. Everybody, every musician had their time in the spotlight and got to really shine. Oh, Leonard Cohen, thank you so much. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And by God, I hope I don't sound like a phony now. Oh, yeah. Making up that shit. I know it's too self-reflective. I just mean, if I could just say it straight without all the other layers. It was wonderful. He is holified. Holified. A holy man. But the songs alluded quite often to a lot of, you know, I was seeing a darker future, and I think a lot of us have that worry sometimes. There's a lot of darkness still on Earth. And is it even increasing? God, I hope not. But I felt also, being in Toronto, being in the Air Canada Centre, being there in a stadium of the most peaceful people, nobody was pushing, shoving, fighting, screaming, hurting each other. Everybody was there to hear this master, Leonard Cohen, sing and perform, and his musicians and the sound and the entire experience, because there was a oneness to it. There was a whole to it. It was a performance, an evening's performance. And it was a beautiful thing. So, yeah, where do you go from there, eh? So many thoughts, so many wanderings, you know, and then you'd come back to why you were there. But it's that active brain you can't stop. I had one terribly painful moment when I suddenly thought, why didn't I invite Chuck? Chuck is at home. He was playing his game. I just said, I'm going out. I tried to rationalize it later, saying, well, I don't think he would have enjoyed it all that much. And then if he wasn't enjoying it, I wouldn't be enjoying it. And I don't know. Does it really mean all that much? Or we can make up for it some other time. But there's another level of just feeling shitty about, I should have at least asked. But didn't. And but did go ahead and made plans for Christmas, and that does involve us. Me and Chuck headed down to Ottawa, made my wife stay home. Oops, was that too much information? I think she just thinks, and now the reason is that it might, it's good for me and Chuck maybe just to have some time together. Seems to me I had similar moments with my own dad, wanting a little more of him. Not that Chuck is wanting any more of me, but I wish he was. Wish it was more giving. And I guess that's the thing that stood out about the concert, was the givingness. But maybe I'm paranoid about religion. But I had a line in my head. I don't think I wrote it down, but religion frightens me. I think that was it. Religion frightens me. I think it was as simple as that, because there's nothing more to say. I'm very glad with my students. They asked me what the third ghost story was, and of course that's when I saw Jesus on my water tank in Nigeria. Gee, I never realized the symbolism. He was actually standing on the water. But I told them it was too religious, too personal. I couldn't really share it with them. Because there are a couple of devout Christians in the class, and I just don't want to get into thinking, yeah, well, I saw the real Jesus, you know. A view. No, it was just a, I used the word, too, not a manifestation. What is that word now? It means like a likeness, or you see, like a ghost, like an apparition. Thank you. God damn, it's embarrassing to lose your marbles. I had visions of Shane coming and visiting me in the old folks' home and pulling out the recorder and me just drooling into the mic. Not very pleasant. Shoot me, please, please. Oh, here's another thought. If the Dixon Jeans, I can't use the word emporium, but empire, the 20 years of Dixon Jane's zines and the Dixon Jane's podcast, if for some reason down the road some Weasley lawyer ever found a way to legitimize it. If there were any proceeds, I would like them to go to my my wife and sons. I thought it was worth putting that out there. Sometimes I think, you know, my shit smells really good. And, I mean, I know a lot of you out there do too, so I'm not too worried about that. It's not like it's embarrassing or anything. I'm back, and this is a fresh start. Dixon Jane's podcast number 378, I believe. Take two. I got 9 minutes into recording, and I just hated it. I just got off on the wrong start. And so I'm back, and I hope this doesn't stink too. I'm much happier now. I got something out of the way. One of the things that was on my list was to call in to the Anthony Marcos show, best episode ever. So I've done that. It's off my chest. Whether or not Anthony decides to play it or not is another story. It doesn't really matter. I just wanted to send that message out there to Anthony and my good friends, Bob and Mark, who do an absolutely brilliant job on best episode ever. Recommended if you're a TV fan at all. And just, I guess for me, as I mentioned in the clip, here I go repeating myself, it's because I know the people and there's an intimacy to podcasting that I absolutely love. By the way, speaking of which, welcome. There are some new listeners out there. And seems to me I hit the mark with the interview, or we hit the mark, Timothy Coyne and myself. I was a little concerned about that because the first time I interviewed him about his book, it was kind of funny and we laughed. And I really do feel the number of brain cells I have lost in the past 2 years, I think it's quite high. And so I really question my abilities sometimes. But I think, if you don't mind me saying, I just relied on sincerity and the spontaneity of the moment. Like, I hadn't planned that out on a conscious level at all. Where are we going to go with that interview? What questions I'm going to ask him? And that is what works for me. And it's a question of just always trusting your instincts and believing yourself and trying to get into a good place. Maybe it's a place of calm, but I think, honestly, more so a place of love. It's the prayer I used to give when I had to give a little speech and I used to be a little nervous, you know, my early days of the Canada-Japan Society or anywhere where I had to give a speech. I would just a moment before I had to go on or say something, I would ask God, the God I don't believe in now, and even then I'm not sure, but I would vocalize it anyway and say, just please let me speak from the heart. Basically, that's what it came down to. Please just calm my heart and let me speak from the heart. And that's what I want to do more of. Sometimes you get sidetracked, especially when I get stoned, I get silly. I did a lot of recording the other night after the Leonard Cohen concert, which I'll get to in a moment. Concerts, I should say. And I won't use those. They're ridiculous. And it is, you know, it doesn't speak well of dope. I read an article, geez, somebody put it out, and I was at older people using pot. And God, it was so negative. And I think, you fuckers, who put this out there? We need it. You get older, you need your weed, you need your brownies, you need to cure that backache and just get into happy zone and you know, quit worrying about stuff, maybe even enter the present a little more. So I didn't like that. But Leonard Cohen, I guess I'll start there because that's the big news for me of this week. I had bought tickets long ago for my wife, and I didn't want to spend too much on them, and then when I got there, I realized, oh my God, it was $85 for the two tickets with all the handling and everything. Well, that wasn't bad, $40 seats, but they were up, you know, kind of in the high zone looking down. It turned out It was great. They were great seats because you could see easily the big screens when you wanted the close-up of his face. The camera work was excellent. So when you wanted to see Lanny holding that mic and just his face and that little fedora, you got it. And oh, boys and girls, I love Leonard Cohen. I love Leonard Cohen. He is a holy man. He is a saint. He is just... Oh, he's somebody Canadians can be so proud of. I put him up there with Pierre Trudeau, and I know that's a political figure and not everybody feels the same way, but as a great Canadian, as an intelligent man, as a man in Cohen's case with so much compassion and love and understanding and humor and depth.
I thought the past would last me.
Honestly. So I went, we took my wife, and she said the first time he just started the first song, I had the playlist with me, she just thought, oh, there's an old man's voice, and she works with old people, so she wasn't sure, and by the second song, she was completely won over, like, wow, this guy is brilliant. And of course, we all know the... What makes it so special is the musicians he brings with him. I'll post a link, okay, on the blog so that I don't get things wrong and misname the instrument. But an international crew of absolutely fine musicians. So when you go, it's not just Leonard singing. Now, that's enough in itself. But there's this added specialness, which my wife really, really appreciated. Of brilliant musicians doing solos and Leonard on his knees before them with his hat off, praising him. Now, this is the concert I saw 2 years ago in Kingston. And it's basically the same concert. He hadn't sung for 15 years and now he can't stop. He's on the road. So I went. We enjoyed it. It was wonderful. The next day I went into my office and my good buddy Brian was there. And I said, Brian, you have got to see this concert. He's playing again tonight. There are still tickets available. Brian goes online, comes back, got my ticket. You know, and I'd spent quite a bit of time convincing him. Well, I did such a good job convincing Brian to go and see it that I realized, what the hell am I doing? He's here again tonight. I'm getting a ticket. And now I never do that kind of thing, you know, part frugality and part just, well, I don't need to. I saw it the night before. But I guess I made my mind up. This time I'd go and I'd maybe have a little token and go on my own. And I went through one of those things as a little bit of guilt, like, what do I tell my wife? Hey, I'm going to go see him again. Like, why would it be an issue? Turns out she phoned me and she was going out with some friends that night. And I said, oh, well, gee, good. Have a great time. And by the way, I think I'm going to go see Leonard Cohen. And it worked out nicely because my wife and I have that kind of understanding. We don't need to be together all the time. And I know for some people there's a very, very different dynamic, but that's mine. And we'll leave it there. So, of course, I went into the freezer, dug out Ken's brownies, and had half a brownie. Turned out it was a little bit too much. I was thinking it wasn't, maybe not quite enough. And a little toot before going in after our Guinness to get set up for the show. Now, the only thing I found, I was floor level, straight on, right behind that sort of center section where they have all the computers and the recorders and the cameraman. And it was perfect because you're looking straight on the stage, right at stage level. And the lighting, which I hadn't noticed the night before, was beautiful. The stunning job of very simple. There were no fucking fireworks, okay? There wasn't pizzazz. It was, you'd almost say, somber in decor. But then they had these long curtains behind and the lights changing for every show. Just the right thing. It was one more aspect of the show. You've just never seen, well, yes, you have seen, but such a level of professionalism that just impressed you on all levels. Now, what's the interesting thing about it, of course, is it's exactly the same performance. Every song, same set, same order. Only a little bit of the quips might be different. Like on the second night, he talked about the lousy review he got the first night and how he wanted to hate, and that just got into a song about There Ain't No Cure for Love. And he recited poetry. The Webb sisters did their solo. Sharon Robinson sang Alexandra Leaving, which was haunting and beautiful. Oh, I could fill up this whole podcast just gushing over Leonard Cohen. I'm glad I went the two nights. Glad he's not wasn't there three, because I would have a hard time not going for the third. In fact, I probably would have gone had there been a third concert. Oh, he is I guess the one man, living man, I respect more than anybody. Of all my heroes, Timothy Leary and Henry Miller and, even Allen Ginsberg and all these people who are gone now, this man at 78 years old is a living legend, is brilliant. And bloody CBC, Tom, what's his name, from CBC 3, introduced him as one of Canada's greatest poets and songwriters. One of, and I tweeted right away, what do you mean one of? He is the greatest. Jesus Christ, how dare you, is what I wrote. But anyway, I guess I'll move that aside and get on. The thing that hit me a little bit, I'd be looking at him, he'd be deep into a song, and suddenly my mind is thinking about my 161 class, or a student in 133, or something that I had to do. And then I'd, whoa, why am I going out there? And I thought, well, I guess it's the dope, you know. But the thing is, while I was having those thoughts, I was deep into those thoughts, and they were good thoughts. They were thoughts about, yes, I made that connection with this student, and yes, I'm going to do this tomorrow, and yes. And they were very, very deep, and then it would, the thought would move on, and I'd realize, whoa, back into the song, back on Leonard. But it alarmed me a little bit that I couldn't stay for 3 hours completely immersed in every second of the show. And I began to think, well, is that just old age? Is that me? And I talked to Brian after the show, and Brian said exactly the same thing, and Brian doesn't smoke weed. So let's cancel out the weed part of the equation. Maybe it's just old age, because Brian is my age, a year older, in fact. And or maybe it's just normal for all humans. You can't stay drilled deep into something. You listen to a song and your mind goes somewhere else. It's the nature of the human mind that we have to continually be moving and challenging and thinking and creating and fixating and, you know, just it's just the way it works. So I don't know that that's a problem. One thought came up in the middle. Sorry, I just thought that was kind of neat and kind of funny. Okay, end of the show. There's this the standing ovation several times during the show, and so deservedly so. But between the rows of chairs is this clear aisle, and the woman beside me just suddenly gets up at the last song, the last encore. He ends with Closing Time, and then the last concert, he added another song on top of it, which I can't remember what it was, and it was great and got people up. Well, there's an open pathway right down to the stage. And this woman goes, and Brian says, I'm going to take a picture. And I just get up, well, fuck that, I'm going too. And finally moved right up to the front, where I could see Leonard Cohen's face. I could see that smile right at the end. See him reach out. He's there in front of me. Not on the screen, not an image of Leonard Cohen, but Leonard Cohen, the living God, standing there, smiling with his beatific, holy smile, looking back so happy at what he had done, what he had shared, what he had given. And I'm looking right into that face and feeling so goddamn excited and wonderful. There's fucking Leonard Cohen. God damn it. Oh, wow. Yeah, sorry. Well, I'm not sorry. I'm just glad. I mean, this is genuine, folks. This is not, I'm not play acting here. This is just, wow. When I saw him in Kingston 2 years ago, I had no idea. And I said, to date, that had been the best concert I had ever been to. The Kingston Arena, a smaller place. And I just hadn't seen a show like that, where he just gave so much grace and support to the other musicians. And you have this sense of, wow, this is live. The sound was amazing. And just remember, I saw this twice, and I felt the same way both times. Once with the brownie, once without. So it's not that, oh, yeah, well, you're high, and that's why. No. My wife loved it, too, and she's a hard person to please, believe me, sometimes. But she got what a good concert was all about. Okay, we'll leave that. We'll move on. I don't know what's left after that, because it just seems so wonderful. I guess the next night was our Boninkai party, our Canada-Japan Society, and I've come to the point, and I know maybe it's silly to talk about it here, because that's really the role of Ken, not the Scarborough dude. That I'm probably going to have to stay on, perhaps as president for another year, because I find I'm in the role of the one who balances things, that I get along with each person. I have a relationship, and it's something I think in life I'm good at. I think it's sort of the thing that I do. And I can stir things up, and it's just what the way it is. It's not that I'm the president, I'm going to make the rules. It's quite the opposite. We're going to be a team, and you guys are going to do the work, and I'll do the odd speech if I have to, and I'll take on that title. But other people have to do this stuff, and I'll contribute. Like, I'm very proud of myself for getting a 5-liter keg of Lake of Bays Pale Ale as a prize for the Boninkai party. I just worked that, got in touch, and I'm very, very happy. In fact, I was even thinking of trying to get Lake of Bays Brewery to sponsor the Dixon Janes podcast, but I don't know. Because I'm going to, meanwhile, I'm still going to drink my other pints. Don't worry about that. Not sticking with just one, but I do like their product, the Pale Ale and their Roost, which is now called something else. They've got a new marketer in. This is the brewery that has a 25, 26-year-old chairperson, CEO, who started it up, and they're doing really well. But on top of that, they produce an excellent product. Anyway, they drop off a 5-liter, these great little kegs as a prize. And I thought, great. Make sure I'm the one who gives that prize away. And I made jokes that I've been drinking for, 50 years, 48 years? Yeah. Something like, is that right? 48 years I've been drinking beer. And that I didn't want to give it away, but I was. And a young Japanese lady won it, who was just fun-loving and happy. And I am just so delighted. It was the perfect winner for this prize. And we made a big fuss about it. And come on, I just had fun at the party. So I had 2 Koan concerts in a row, and then a night at a really good knock-em-out Boninkai year-end Japanese-Canadian party that went off really well, thanks to the guys on the board who did all the work, because I had nothing to do with it. And I'm just so proud of that organization. And I guess this goes back to Leonard Cohen. There was this sense I had during this show that he is doing what he has to do. Right now, he knows. In the future, he might not be able to do what he's doing. He made the joke, like, in 2 years, I'm going to take up smoking again when I'm 80, and some nurse is going to pour me scotch and going to take the plastic off that wrap, pack of cigarettes, and light up a cigarette. And he made fun of it, but it was like, I know this will come to an end sometime. I won't be able to do this. He was very much aware of his mortality and frailty and everything else. But meanwhile, he's doing well what he's doing. And please do not misinterpret what I'm about to say, but I feel in my life now, I am doing well the things I'm doing. My podcasting, I love this fucking podcast. I'm being honest and straight. This is good. This is real. This is somebody screaming their head off, a person you may like or may not like. That's fine. Good. It filters itself. You who don't like this old man blabbing, you fuck off. You stay away. You don't come back. That's great. And those who have some kind of an interest, yeah, you're there. You're there. This is good. I'm sharing. But this, and the Canada-Japan Society that's got a, this interesting mix of Canadians and Japanese, of younger and older, of these ideas and those ideas, and to be there sort of as the balancing act with these different voices, different opinions, different views, these different creativities. Wow, this is fun. This is really fun. This is neat driving this thing. And then my teaching. Like, I had students come up and really genuinely thank me at the end of the term. Can I thank you for teaching us, for sharing that, for making us think? Because I focused not on where do you put the fucking comma. You're going to learn it if you want, or you're not going to learn it. But think. Open your mind. You know, I'm proud of myself. I'm happy that I'm living pretty much as far out to the edge and as I can. I don't know what I mean by that. I just mean pushing out, not holding back. Doing, fully engaged in what I'm doing. And everything I'm doing, I'm engaged. I'm engaged right now with you. And this is such a good feeling. All right, 20 minutes, 22 minutes. I'm still going to motor on because I'm still not finished. Maybe we'll have a pause here. All right, let's have a pause. And for you, that was a delay of one wonderful song I know you'll enjoy because I put very good music for this podcast. I take it very seriously. I don't give you shit. You go back. You look at the 1,000-plus tracks I have played on the entire history of the Dixon Janes podcast. Over 1,000 all different songs. And you'd say, wow, 90% of those are great. Well, I'd say that. Maybe you wouldn't, but I would. Anyway, back to the Leonard Cohen concert. One more thing. Now, Leonard is dark. He joked about, you know, looking in the mirror. It's a wonderful, wonderful part of the show when he starts doing this talk with that wonderful voice. And he said, and I looked in the mirror and I said, Leonard, lighten up. It just had the audience broken up. We just cheered. The audience who was there loved him. We loved him. He loved us back, even though we're from Toronto. Anyway, at one point in the show, he sings the future, and you listen to his songs, there's a depth to them, but there's a darkness sometimes about the future. It's like he sees real things out there. Like he knows some truths, and they're not all pretty truths when he's talking about death and war and the future and things that, oh man. There was a point in the show, I told you my mind wandered a little bit. And I suddenly, all to my horror, was experiencing the hatred of a man towards another man, the brutality. And it was probably in Egypt or in Syria, and it was one man who had the power and no compassion, an absolute pure hatred towards another man that was being beaten, tortured, killed. And it was just so dark. I often mention that on this show. I said, it's the time I grew up in the shadow of World War II. You know, the shadow was still there lying over everything. You know, even though there was rebuilding this, the 1950s, this bright American future for all of us, the car, the suburbs, the driveways, the elementary schools, you know, the new foods and everything. Wow, the 50s, wonderful. The dark time is behind us, but still there is this shadow, I think, and of stories. And it's always been part of my life. And, of course, coming of age during the Vietnam War, when, man, if it wasn't for that border, I might be forced to go over there and be shot at or something worse. And so it's always been a part of me, the reality. And I think as I get older and I think maybe a little more compassionate, which I'm trying to be. And as the world changes, certainly post 9/11, as we realize, whoa, we are all connected in every single way. That what is happening in Syria, the horror, the starvation in another place, it's closer and closer and closer. And we can't escape it. We are not free from it. We are not cut off from it. It is a part of us. And so I might make a reference to that. Yes, there's bad things happening. I read it in the paper. I heard it on the news. I saw the pictures on TV, that body dragged behind a motorcycle down the streets of wherever by people who just are not the same as me, who are full of hate, and you can't reason with them. You can never be part of them. There's this horror of these other men who aren't like us. This intimacy I talked about, this sharing and caring and love. So you're in this Air Canada Center. You're in Canada. You're in the middle of all this safety and love and joy and happiness that here we are. I can get on a train. I can go into the arena. I can hear a wonderful concert without a thought of bombs falling or police waiting outside or horrors that are going to happen to me or my family for the political opinions I've expressed. Nothing bad is going to happen to me here. But right now, right at this moment, in the middle of this concert, somebody is being brutalized. It just hit me so hard, so deep, so chillingly. I was there. It was that person was maybe doing it to me. It was awful, and I was so glad when that moment passed. But it stayed with me, obviously. And again, this isn't fake drama. This is the concern that in the world right now there is just so much fear and hatred and change, and yet there's some hope. I subscribe on Facebook to the Art of the Revolution, and I just keep getting these day after day after day, picture after picture after picture of a message being, we have to take back control. This political system we're living under, this capitalist system is evil in itself. We've always talked about the evil empire, the communists, the fascists, and something is deeply, deeply wrong with the system that we are in the middle of, that we are part of, that we are supporting, that the tools all around me, my iPod, my iPad, my iPhone are all a part of. And we don't want to give it up, and yet, we know there's something wrong. I'm going to turn now. This is a sermon, isn't it? to Timothy Leary again, Design for Dying. I'm just about to get onto the laws of gravity and stability repealed, autonomous individuals and self-organizing systems. That's the thing that got me. But there was one more passage. Where is it on the... Oh, God damn. I should do better. I should plan these things. Classical magical correspondence. It's just that he's talking about being able to organize ourselves. Maybe this is it. Under the heading Autonomous Individuals and Self-Organizing Systems. Keep that in mind. As more and more individuals are liberating themselves from the bondage to authoritarian, hierarchical management structures, freeing themselves to interact with the world supported by their wits rather than traditional social rules and relations, I predict that cybernetic principles of organization will emerge within the social system and transform conventional social structure into a fabric whose weave is defined by the sum of interactions of autonomous entities. Now, you may have to listen to that twice. I've read it several times. It just keeps jumping out at me every time because I think that's what we are doing in this podcasting tapestry we are weaving. That we are connecting on a new way. It isn't from the top down. It isn't through other channels or people or systems, but directly to each other. The fact that I listen to Anthony Marco and Adam Greatrix and people, friends and others who I just value, and we share things together. We're creating our own interactions. I think that's related to what he said here. I'm going to read it again. Forgive me. Autonomous individuals and self-organizing systems is the name of this section. As more and more individuals are liberating themselves from the bondage to authoritarian hierarchical management structures, freeing themselves to interact with the world supported by their wits rather than traditional social rules and relations, I predict that cybernetic principles of organization will emerge within the social system and transform conventional social structure into a fabric whose weave is defined by the sum of interactions of autonomous entities. I don't think I'm going to spoil that by quoting more from the book. I would just say that everything I've said up to now, including this, I don't know. It's true. It's so important to me now that I have Timothy Leary, that I have Leonard Cohen, that I have Henry Miller, long gone though he is, that I have my heroes, that I have humans that I can look up to and be inspired by, that voices get out there and reach us, and we choose. It's not just who the authorities tell you. This is what the last message I taught all my students, the last screen I put up always, think for yourself, challenge authority. Think for yourself, challenge authority. Think for yourself, challenge authority. And, you know, it was kind of funny because it was a game. I said, at the same time you're here, you're in college, you got to pass the grades, you got to play the game, you know? But beyond that, can you do that? Or are you just at the point where you're hungry and you got no money and you're at college because you want a job and a career and you want all the nice things that your teacher has? Maybe that's true. But God damn, am I a lucky man to have landed on my feet. Born with horseshoes up my ass. I've said it now again. I'm sorry. I'm getting back to me, and there's an awful lot of me on the Dixon James podcast. I did have that thought this morning. I did realize when I was reading something else. Actually, it was the same book. I was browsing through. By the way, New Year's resolution: Ken, Scarborough dude, read more, watch TV less. Read more, watch TV less. And I think if I just cut out some of the newscasts and kept it down to one or two a day instead of five or six, that would free up a lot of time and probably make me a lot happier. I don't think I could ever give it up altogether. I don't think I can. I don't think I can. I don't think I want to. It's too useful a tool as a teacher to be aware of what's happening in your city and in the world at large and in the countries my students come from. It's just something you it's like technology. You've got to be up to date. You've got to be responsible. Gosh, was I going to go from there or was I going to stop? Am I going to go back to my notes on iPad here? Let's see what we got here. Egypt Sharia law. Dave Brubeck, I mentioned earlier, died. I mentioned in the clip that I didn't use because I wasn't ready, and now I'm ready. Back in high school, grade 9, I met up with there was a core group of us. I think I've always found that little collection of friends. I think everybody does. It's obvious. The group you're comfortable with, and you sort of grow into each other, and it you know, somebody might be on the fringe, somebody you get a little more intimate with and close, and you share more with. Well, there was one friend who I knew right then, knew him all the way through university, and still do today. And every summer when I go back to Montreal with my students and I stay the extra day, I meet up with Mike, and we drive out to Il Perro and we have a smoked meat sandwich at, you can't beat Pete's Meat, smoked meat sandwich place. It's not Il Perro, but I don't know, Dorian, wherever, you know. West Island. And Mike was grown up. When the rest of us were just kids and immature, Mike was already an adult. He was born an adult. He read Somerset Maugham. He would quote Somerset Maugham. Well, nobody in high school was reading Somerset Maugham, but Mike was, and Mike knew all the stories, and Mike could tell the stories. And it just made him kind of an interesting character. And Mike could siphon off a little bit of his dad's alcohol. So in fact, the very first alcoholic beverages I had were at his place. And I went home. I think probably one drink did it to me. And accused them of getting me drunk and robbing me blind. Well, of course, I never had any money. I had, you know, silver in my pocket. It was just ridiculous. It was like I was stoned for the first time. We used to do little tokes. Mike would, you know, I supplied the hash. Mike would get his razor blade out and cut off the evening's toke supply, which always brought me down because I was like, well, what if I want more? But you've already wrapped up the tinfoil and put it away and I'm not going to get any more than the three tokes that are lined up in front of me. It's like Coke on a, you know, on a mirror. Hey, maybe I want another line later. But anyway, Mike would play Dave Brubeck, and I had never heard this before. And he'd play the New Christian Minstrels and the Swingle Singers and the Rolling Stones 12 by 5. Like, he had this eclectic taste. He was such a wonderfully rich character to know in high school who made my life so much richer. He was the man I was supposed to travel to Europe with in the fall of 1969, and his parents convinced him not to, and he backed out. And it was the best thing that ever happened because I went on my own as well. I'm going anyway. And I went on my loan and I can't alone. And I just can't imagine a better way for me to have gone because that's what I needed. I needed to learn to stand on my own 2 feet and to survive. But anyway, Mike would put on Blue Rondo a la Turk and Unsquare Dance. And, you know, from the famous The Take Five album. And you got into it. You know, fuck, this is good stuff. So this is a thank you to Mike, who, of course, would never, ever listen to this podcast. But a friend who loved Mercedes, who planned out his life, who mapped out his life even then when the rest of us were just so immature. Well, I was the least mature of all of those people. And I'm lucky that I glammed on to Bob, who was in the cadets and learned how to polish his shoes and shine his belt buckle and things that I could never do, and got a job wiring for the Bell Telephone and worked his way up to being an executive. Wonderful, wonderful. And Cliff, the other friend who Cliff and Mike were the two Leica fanatics who both took different styles of photos, but both convinced me that my first camera had to be a Leica, and it was the Leica 3B, which I still have, 1938, with the screw mount 3.5 Elmar on it. Anyway, those friends, Cliff, who went on to have a very successful career as a naturalist biologist within the federal park system and spent his entire life living in a park, well, living outside and working in a park, and canoeing, and just people of my era, we had a crack at success. We had a chance. We were born into a really a golden age, a wonderful age of those of us post-war babies who just had a good education and a lucky enough to be born Canadian in a middle-class suburb, West Island of Montreal. Wow, we sure had a good life. Anyway, I know I'm getting away from the point of that music, but there we go. Dave Brubeck, one more person, gone at the age of 90 or 92 or something, just the day before his birthday. And so, of course, we're going to hear some Dave Brubeck on this show. I guess that's about it. My God, I've gone on for another 17 minutes, 40 minutes already, and I haven't even... it's the same day. It's Saturday morning, 11 o'clock. I got marking to do. It's a marking weekend, so I'm going to go home and do that. I've gone out to my favorite little By the Bluffs restaurant to have a breakfast, and I'm just feeling good. It's funny, you know, boys and girls, those of you who are podcasters, if you start off a podcast and you're not in the mood, scrap it. Stop. Go do something else. Go get a donut or a cup of coffee or listen to somebody else's podcast. Do something else. Push the button when you're in the mood. Now, that's a, you know, you may say, hey, but dude, you always say just put the button and record. Well, I do. But I did it again the second time because the first time I just the head was jumbled. And now I'm feeling really happy and I feel so unself-conscious. And I guess that's the difference. That's the difference. The first time I recorded, I was thinking of a new listener I picked up yesterday, somebody who actually was decent enough. I'm going to play his recording. Thank you for sending that in. A person who has two names, who discovered me through both Keith McNally and Tim Coyne. I think that is really, talk about this tapestry. That's amazing. So you either heard that at the opening of this podcast and now you're getting the explanation, you know, 40 minutes into the show, or you're going to hear it now because, Ken, it makes more sense to play that part after you've kind of introduced it. No, I don't do things that way. My point was, I felt a little self-conscious, like, oh, there's a new listener out there. I better be good. And now that's gone completely. It doesn't matter. I don't have to do this for anybody or please anybody in particular, and any individual that doesn't like it can fuck right off. And that's the way it's always got to be. But meanwhile, you hope you make people happy and you're thrilled, absolutely pissed pants thrilled when somebody says, you know, I listen to your show and I really like it. I got to listen to some more. And it makes you feel really good, and it gives you a little bit of that sense of believing in yourself. And again, this goes back to Leonard Cohen, believing in yourself, and he does. He knew he was doing what he had to do, what he knew was right. And it's all relative. Doesn't mean we all have to be brilliant, but it means we have to have some passion about what we do, and we have to care. God, I should write a book like all those other guys. Now, this is my book, folks. This is my book. All right? So enough said. Enough done. I'm going to get on. I'm going to listen. I've got my... I dug out an old charger for something that I bought probably at Shoppers Drug Mart. And it charged up the batteries on my... Or the battery or the whatever on my old iPod. So I can go back and I can listen to any number of podcasts. I've got a whole bunch of them here still to go. And that's how I'm going to end my day on the drive home. So, boys and girls, I'll be back for one more time to finish off this clip. Got about 10 minutes left, I suppose, after the songs, if that. And that'll be that. And we'll hear from you again next week. And meanwhile, this, I think, will have been put together on my new fucking iMac. Wow!
Bye for now.
Joe could play anything I suggested to him. And when you say everybody knows when Take Five starts, well, who do you think started that rhythm? It wasn't Paul Desmond, it wasn't me. That was Joe Morello's rhythm. He's the first one that started playing boom junk da junk boom boom boom. He used to play that backstage.
You know, it's funny because I was listening to it on the train yesterday. And people have always said this is a great Desmond showpiece, but it's actually a Joe Morello showpiece because it's a wonderful.
It was created for Joe. He asked for a drum solo in Five, and I put it together from some melodies that Paul had.
Right.
So it was created kind of in a rehearsal in my house, but we gave Paul the credit for it.
Did it bother you, those people who said that? One critic compared you to Wagner at one point.
Yeah.
That you were the cool, sort of detached, academic jazz man. Did that bother you?
It bothered me that he hadn't listened to my records. Wagnerian is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Cool is ridiculous. We didn't consider ourselves cool. And if you listen to one of the first quartet things, look for the silver lining. If you consider that cool, I don't know what cool is.
Yeah, I'm going to start talking over that. It's great. Just turned on CBC, and of course, we were talking earlier on this podcast about Dave Brubeck, and there we are. Trust CBC to have an old interview they can pull up. I wanted to go back to that because I was talking about that friend Mike from high school, and I just realized how lucky I was to have so many good friends. Like right from the start, I guess I knew the value and the importance of friends, although I wasn't conscious of it all. But somehow, I just connected with some interesting people. I'm thinking back to Mike's basement, and he'd go from Brubeck, which it was cool. And you'd hear this stuff, and you think, wow, I'm not hearing this anywhere else. I'm certainly not hearing it on CKGM or Cuff Cuff, CFCF Radio in Montreal. And this is sort of pre-Shom FM days, you know. This is the early Beatles stuff. This is the same time he's playing this. He's playing 12 by 5 by the Rolling Stones. And the new Christy Minstrels or the Swingle Singers. And this, such an eclectic collection. But the guy was just so much more mature than the rest of us. He was so grown up. So that's the first thing I wanted to say. Secondly, I don't know. I'm parked outside a movie theater. I'm on my way to see Lincoln. It's Sunday, and I think, what the hell? I got all these free scene points. Let me treat myself to a movie, because this is the only little day I have off before this blitz of heavy-duty marking coming up, the stuff that I just hate doing. And we got, you know, fixed deadlines you have to meet, and you just cannot screw up on this. You got to be fair, consistent, thorough. And those are all hard things for me who just, I like to wing it. I like to be creative, you know. Damn it, I just got here. I'm parked outside the theater now, and I figured maybe I will just smash this whole podcast together before my new iMac arrives on Tuesday and christen it with a new episode and put this one together on what remains of my old MacBook that I bought. First purchase of the company I started with my business partner. We still have going, but it's just, it's in silence. The company is just sort of, we just kind of parked it for a while, and who knows what'll happen down the road. We'll see. But meanwhile, I came out with a very, very nice MacBook, which I loved at the time. But you know, these things, 5 years, they grow old and tired. enough of that. Listening to and enjoying, of course, Broken Area, which sort of arose from the ashes of Broca's Area. That would be Isabel and Dave, Dr. Dave, to some of you. Isabel is a charming lady, a creative person, a French teacher, an aspiring artist, a lady with words. I love to hear her talk and express things. And, of course, between the two of them, they sometimes make a bit of a comedy duo. So that's always that's fun, bringing you up to date on the social scene, what's happening and who's podcasting. Oh, it was something else about, yeah, yeah. Brubeck. I cannot believe I saw Dave Brubeck play live with the whole works. Joe Morello, Paul Desmond, and Eugene Smith, was it, on bass? I can't remember that person. Well, all that's from memory, not Google or looking it up. In the Henry F. Hall building. The Henry F. Hall building was the main eight-story building that housed Sir George Williams University back before it was Concordia. And he came, and this very same Mike sort of pointed out to him. I don't even know if I was a student then, but Mike said, hey, you know, there's a con-, and I'm sure it was sold out. It was not a big auditorium, but holy fuck, they were playing a college circuit. And then that triggered the thought, wait a minute. I saw Gordon Lightfoot at McGill in some gymnasium, I'm sure. And then that led to me, well, wait a minute. Not only did I see Lightfoot there, I saw Lightfoot at Acadia University because the Nova Scotia guy was a student down there, and I'd go down and visit. I regretted not going away to university. I commuted from my parents' home in Lachine by train into downtown Montreal. Saved money. I mean, I didn't owe anything when I came out. But I knew that my friends who had left home and got away to university had a better, richer, more interesting experience than I did in many respects. Now, that's probably what drove me to Europe in 1969, halfway through my university. So looking back at the big picture, good. That worked out very well. But I traveled down for their winter carnivals. It was just exciting and to be down in, you know, Wolfville, Nova Scotia, and saw not only Lightfoot, but I guess the next year, Simon and Garfunkel, when they still played the college circuit. So all these memories have sort of come flooding back with, you know, Dave Brubeck's death. And you go back and think, holy shit, all these little pieces of my life earlier on that somehow just get forgotten, you know, and then suddenly you realize, wait, whoa. Yeah, you know, and I'm still, I wish I had. Of course, you can Google it all and you can get the exact dates. You know, when did you see the Beatles in Montreal at the Forum? And when did you see the Rolling Stones, which is far more exciting, a concert at the Montreal Forum when you were just down on floor level, right up there at the stage, staring up at Mick Jagger and the Stones. Holy fuck, really? Was that just a dream or did that really happen? No, that really fucking happened. How did I even get my shit together then to do that? Like, where was the turning point? Where did I go from that? Kid with glasses moving to Lachine in grade 5. And somehow surviving elementary school, but yeah, making friends. You know, I was a kid from out of town. I was a kid from Valleyfield. And just made the right friends and connections to give me a rich and wonderful life in Lachine, Quebec, the place that I sort of parallel to my children's experience here in Scarborough, Ontario. You know, a suburban house and high school and the friends my kids made. And they'll look back on their life. And hopefully they're going to look back positively the way I eventually came around to looking back at my life. At the time, you know, I want to get out of Lachine. And, of course, that's when we all moved out west of Vancouver and began our new lives away from our past, away from our parents. But anyway, you've heard enough of that, about that. 10 minutes on and I got to go back. Jesus, why am I not listening to Brubeck?
Sometimes I might get a little angry, like I was in World War II, seeing the destruction of Europe, seeing the death of my friends. You do get angry. But knowing that we've got to find a better way. And maybe I can help a little. I know it won't be much. I'm trying to get all these things recorded before I'm not around here anymore.
Well, we pray that will be sometime in the future.
I hope.
Thank you so much for coming in, and thank you for all those years of great music. I started when I was about 12 years old and I haven't stopped yet.
Thank you, Michael.
That was my conversation with the great jazz pianist Dave Brubeck in September of 2002. Dave Brubeck died on Wednesday, one day short of his 92nd birthday. Jazz giant Dave Brubeck. That's our program for December 9th, 2012. It's time to thank all the people who put it inside your radio this week. Our producers, Kate Cochran.